It's good to be here with you guys. My name's Chris. If we've not met, I'm the campus pastor. Thank you guys for being here. Like Pastor Moses said, you know, Family Month is one of those things where we all have relationships. We have people in our lives that we care about, and we don't accidentally have good relationships. You have to be intentional about saying, "Hey, I want to put time. I want to put effort. I want to work on this, and I want this relationship to be as strong as it can." And so that's what Family Month is about. It's an opportunity for us to set aside a few weeks specifically to talk about these things. And over this series, we're going to be looking at a story in the book of Esther. And we're going to be pairing some of these scriptures and some of these passages and practical teachings with also some psychological discoveries. There's a doctor named John Gottman who's written a bunch on relationships and marriages. And so we're taking what he's good at as far as the psychological aspect of the relationships and what people are looking for and need in relationships. And we're pairing that together because it all lines up with what the scriptures teach us about how we should and could care for each other and what Jesus is inviting us to. This last Monday, you guys may know at least, my wife loves Disney. We go to Disney fairly often. It's that one thing that we're just like, okay, we're going to spend the money on these passes, and we go almost every Monday. This last week, we went without kids, which is way better. We had a great time, and it was the first time that we got to go to the new Star Wars Galaxy's Edge land at Disney. Has anybody seen that, been a part of that? It's pretty amazing. That's bizarre. Okay, last time it was everybody on this side and nobody on this side. Okay, all right. Second service people, I get it. We went, and it's amazing. I mean, Disney doesn't do anything halfway. And so we walk in, and we literally felt like we were in another planet, a galaxy far, far away. And it was a crazy experience. We had a ton of fun. I flew the Millennium Falcon and yelled at like a 12-year-old for not doing the gunning job very well. So it was like a very high point for me as a pastor. It was the whole thing was amazing. And we were walking around and just had a great time. But there's this thing with Disney and with my wife and when we go, and you guys may know this, but if you are a certain level of celebrity or kind of need or would like a certain level of attention, then you can actually, they will assign someone to kind of guide you throughout the park. And you can tell who those people are because they wear these plaid vests. You guys know this? And so my wife knows this because she's obsessed. And she also really loves seeing celebrities. And so every time we're in the park, we're having a great family time. I'm playing with my kids, throwing them up in the air, totally with my family, and Ez is just looking around for celebrities the whole time. No, but she'll see a person wearing one of these vests. She's like, "It's a plaid, Chris. It's a plaid over there. Is that a famous person? Do you know who they are?" And I'm like, "I don't know who they are." You know, and so for years, honestly, we have seen all of these plaids, these people wearing these vests, but we never recognize who they're with. And so they're either just like independently wealthy people or they're celebrities that we don't recognize or whatever it is. Well, we're in Star Wars land and we're hanging out, and all of a sudden, of course, a plaid walks by with this group and she's like, "Okay, they look familiar. I got to figure out who that is." And of course, she's whispering as if it's not insanely loud at Disneyland and nobody can hear anyway. So I go and I get a drink and I come back, and she had like walked around to this like stairway and she's like leaning over top to see if she can recognize who it is. Very subtle, very kind and gracious. And she still didn't figure out who it was. And so we left and we're walking around, and literally we walked away from this moment and we're walking kind of to get back to where we came from. And we walk by this lady and I recognize her, and she didn't even have a plaid with her. It was Connie Britton, aka Tammy Taylor from Friday Night Lights, which we love the show Friday Night Lights. I don't know if anybody else watched it. And so I was like, "Babe, I think that's you know," and we're whispering and trying to be very subtle. And there's this thing, and I don't know if you guys do this, and it depends. And I'm not very, like, I don't get starstruck very easily, but it's Tammy Taylor, you know? And so there's this thing, and I'm like, maybe if we look normal, she'll think that she wants to be friends with us. You know, like, maybe if we just act like, "I'm cool, you know, I'm not weird at all, I'm not, you know, we're normal, we're just like you, totally normal people, you know." And so we, like, walk by, and of course, she doesn't care at all. And it's like, but there's this thought where it's like, man, I want to be seen, and I would love for her to see that I'm a cool guy, too, and I can hang out, and I know about football in Texas and, you know, all these things about this one TV show that was a small part of her life, and she's done a million and other things, but there's this thing where we all kind of have these desires, and whether it's this kind of ridiculous example or whether it's other aspects of your life, we all want to be seen, we all want to be included and liked, and most of what we do as people and as individuals is an attempt to get our three core emotional needs met. These three needs, Dr. John Gottman wrote about these in his book. He talked about the three needs are to be liked, to be included, and to be in control. And it's not always to be in control of everything that's happening, although some of you like that also. It's to be able to be in control of your story, to feel like you have a say in what's happening. And he's and studies and research that he has done, he said every single person has these three core emotional needs, and everything we do has to do with figuring out how can we be liked, how can we be included, and how can I be in control of my story. And so, how do we go about getting these three core emotional needs met? You would think we would just say that to people, like, hey, here's my emotional needs. And we would make it really easy. But if you're in a relationship or have been for any point of time, you know that we don't make it that easy on the people that we're in relationship with. We hint at things and we assume that they'll know what we want them to say. And we assume that they'll figure out how we want them to act. And there's all of these kind of subtle ways that we kind of throw out little hints at what we're looking for. And usually that doesn't go very well. Usually that's one of the huge points of contention in marriages and in relationships. And even as you're working as a parent with kids or coworkers or friends, you know, when you're subtly hinting at the things you want, then you become incredibly hurt or upset that they haven't given you exactly what you want. But they don't know. They haven't picked up on those hints. And so there's a word for this, and it's a word we're going to talk about a lot, and it's called a bid. We bid for these things. We bid to have these three core emotional needs met. A bid is simply a request for connection. We are not talking about poker today. I know some of you are sad. A bid is a request for connection. It's this hint that we're talking about. It's hey, I'm going to put this out there, and hopefully you will respond to me in such a way that I feel liked and included and in control of my story. This is what a bid is. This is what we're going to be talking about. And they're different from person to person. I mean, it depends on your upbringing and your experiences in life. It depends on your personality and the season of life that you're in. And so this is what makes it difficult, because you guys know this to be true. Not everybody you know needs the same things in the same ways. And so we all are different. We're wired differently, and some of us are wired differently in healthy ways. Some of us are wired differently in unhealthy ways. And we're all sending out bids to people in our lives all of the time. And so it can become incredibly difficult to know and to be able to recognize and decode these things for what they are. And to be clear, they are not all healthy or unhealthy. They can be either. A bid for connection can be done in a very unhealthy way, which we're going to look at in a minute, or it can be done in a healthy way. And so it's not that a bid is all good or it's all bad. It has to do with the way that you're approaching. It has to do with your level of health as an individual, the relationship's level of health. They are learned over time. Usually, they're really highly shaped by the families that we grew up in. Many of us, we grew up in homes, we grew up in experiences where we had to spend time to figure out how can I survive in this family, in this home, in this relationship, in this state, in this whatever it might be. There's all kinds of different overlays in our lives. And so we figure out usually dysfunctional ways to survive in dysfunctional environments. And that's not a bad thing. We did what we had to do. But then as we become adults, now we have the opportunity to say, I don't want to be unhealthy anymore. I want to approach this in the right way. I want to do things in the right way. I want to have a different relationship with my spouse. I want to have a different relationship with my kids. I want to have a different relationship with my neighbors or my coworkers. What got me to where I'm at today, it got me here, but it might not be the best way to continue approaching relationships and to continue connecting with people. When I was growing up, I grew up in North Carolina, and I don't remember, we didn't go super often, but there was multiple times I remember going to livestock auctions. Has anybody ever been to a livestock auction? Quick hand, I appreciate that. It is a sight to behold. I mean, the ones that I went to at least were in these dusty old barns, and they would just bring cattle or sheep or whatever it was through, and people would just start like bidding on things, and they had the redneck in the chair at the top of the room, like 425, and I can't do it, but you get the point, right? And here's what's happening. He's looking at someone, and they bid for something, and he sees them, and he recognizes it until he sees a different bid. And there's this distraction. Then he goes over here and he doesn't even pay attention anymore, doesn't even remember what's happening over here. And then there's a different bid. And in our lives, we experience that same thing because your spouse, your friends, your family, kids, whatever it might be, they're sending out a bid for your attention. They're sending out a bid to have their core emotional needs met. And oftentimes we see it and we recognize it. And then you get an email show up on your phone from work. And now that's got your attention. You got a different bid. And then you realize, well, The Bachelor starts in 3 minutes, so I got to get my kids in bed so I can watch The Bachelor. You know, and all of a sudden, there's all these different bids that are always vying for our attention. And so even if you recognize the bid that someone is sending out, there's 1,000 other things. Our lives are so busy, and we are so busy, and there's so many things going on, it can become incredibly difficult to navigate this. And so what we're talking about today is, how do we carve out space to focus on these bids and the relationships that we care about the most? What if we started seeing every interaction through this lens? How could that transform the way that we interact with people? What if your wife or your husband or your children or your coworker or your neighbor, what if what they're really saying to you in these moments is that I'm trying to connect and be liked and be included? I'm trying to have these emotional needs that we all have. I'm trying to have these needs met. What if your coworker inviting you to lunch isn't really about eating? What if there's a bid for connection and validation and trust? What if your kid asking you, like mine does very frequently, to play video games with him, what if it's not that he doesn't want me to destroy him at Super Smash Brothers, because I will. But what if he's actually saying, I want to connect with you. I want to know that you care about me, that you see me, that you want to spend time with me, that what's important to me is important to you too. What if your husband pointing out the car that he wants to get one day, what if it's not really about the car? What if it's a bid for connection? What if your wife asking you about the dress that she's trying on? What if she doesn't actually want to know whether or not you like the dress? She wants to know whether or not you like her. These are all bids that we have over and over again, and we can respond in different ways to these bids. And especially as it becomes our family and the people that we're closest to, wouldn't we want to be intentional? Wouldn't we want to say, man, I want to give them the best that I have. I don't want to get distracted by the other bids. I don't want to get distracted by the other things that are coming up. I want to intentionally pursue these things and figure out how to do that. And so in this book, this study that was done, Dr. John Gottman, he discovered that how close we feel to someone directly correlates to how they respond to our bids for connection over time. So how close we feel to someone, it is tied to not just an individual thing, but it's tied to how we respond to their bids over time. One time, it's like, okay, maybe it's a bad day. Two times, okay, maybe it's still a bad day. Three times, and I don't know how it is. Maybe for some people in your life, it's like, I gave them three chances. I'm out. Maybe for other people, there's family members, and you're still trying to figure out how to get them to respond to your bids. But over time, the level of closeness and the depth of relationship that we have, it's shaped by how we respond to their bids for connection over time. Essentially what he's saying, and this is the point, this is what I want to drive into your heads, and I want us to be able to remember this, because you're going to probably be not even on your way to lunch yet before someone that you know sends out a bid for your attention, for your response to be valued and included and cared for. And what would it look like for us to remember this idea? It's a simple idea that your response shapes your relationship. And this is not a deep earth-shattering concept, but in these moments that oftentimes we respond, we get distracted by other things, we respond poorly to different bids, we're missing the point. It's not always in this one moment that it's going to change the relationship, but if you changed it 1 degree today, that might not be much today, but over a year, over 2 years, over 5 years, over 20 years of going down this relationship, that is a completely different trajectory. Our response, how we respond to our spouse, our kids, our friends, our coworkers, it will shape the relationship in this moment in a small way. But over time, it has a massive impact. This is what the studies have shown, and this is what we need to start to internalize today and in those moments when we are trying to figure out how we want to respond. And there's three different ways that we can respond to bids for connection. There's three different ways. The first one is positively. So when we act engaged, attentive, responsive, interested, enthusiastic about what they say, what people hear is, I hear you. I'm interested in you. I understand you. I'm on your side. I want to be with you. I'm for you. When we respond positively, people, these three core emotional needs are met in a specific way. When we respond negatively, we can act defensive or argumentative or critical or angry. You point out the car that you would like to own one day, and your spouse is like, we're never going to own that. That car is stupid. I only buy American, or whatever it is. That's a negative response. And so there's a rejection that comes from that. It's a painful thing. And our response shapes our relationship. And you would assume that a negative response is the worst type. But it's actually the third type of response that has the most damage to a relationship. And that is an indifferent response. When we respond indifferently, they're putting out a bid for attention. And we respond indifferently. It's not positive. It's not negative. We act distant or distracted or uninterested. We ignore them or are silent. And what they hear in that moment, what your wife, your husband, your kids, your friends, they hear, I'm avoiding you. Your interests are beneath me. Everything is more important than you. You're not worth my time. You're not even worth the response. These are things that change the vibe of the room right now, saying these things out loud. Oftentimes, this is what we're communicating to the people that we love the most. My son loves video games, and he asked, like this last week, and this always happens this way. Whenever I'm going to teach on a certain topic, my family always helps me understand how bad I am at this topic. And he's asked me all week, and it's been crazy. He's been trying to get the building ready, and I've had family in town, and it seems like every time I'm about to step out or do something or work on something, he's like, hey, you want to play video games? And it's like, more than anything, I would love to destroy you at Super Smash Brothers right now. No, absolutely. Like, I'm still a big kid. I love my kid, and I would love to play. I'm the one that fought to have let him have video games because I think that it's awesome. And so what does it look like for me in these moments? Because he's going to ask me, and I'm going to say no, and he's going to ask me, and I'm going to say no, and I can respond in different ways, positively, negatively, or indifferently. But I had to decide all week long, okay, how do I respond positively and knowing that I can't play video games every time he asks? You can respond positively to a bid for your attention without having to do what the person is asking you to do. We're going to look at this. But it's an intentional decision because at some point, he's probably just going to stop asking me to play video games. At some point, your wife is probably going to stop asking how you think she looks. At some point, these relationships that they get the negative response or the indifferent response for so long, they're going to withdraw to a point where they don't feel safe bidding for your attention. They don't feel like you're going to help meet their three core emotional needs. And so we have to figure out, okay, my response shapes my relationship. And so how do I sit down with an 8-year-old and explain to him that I have to go work at night, that I have to go on a Saturday morning, that I can't do it right now, but at 5 p.m. or tomorrow morning, let's get up an hour before school and we'll play video games then. It's responding positively because you're letting them know, I see you, I validate you, I love you, I care about you, and this is the work that we have to do. Our response shapes our relationships. Your most valued relationships, they might be struggling right now, and you're really trying, and you don't really understand why there's a challenge, and it's because our response shapes our relationship. And so what does it look like to respond to these bids differently? There's a story in Esther. I told you we're going to be in Esther chapter 1. We're going to look at this story in this book over the next 4 weeks. And so we're going to just read the first part of it today. This story takes place in, it's one of the oldest stories in Scripture, and it was a very different time, a very different culture. It takes place in the Persian Empire, and this was the largest empire in the world for about 200 years. 44% of the world's population was part of the Persian Empire. I mean, this is a massive powerhouse empire, wealthy, incredible military. Modern day, it would cover Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Syria, some of Egypt, some of Greece. I mean, this is a massive space. And so the king at this time, his name was King Xerxes, which is always a difficult one to say. He decided he wanted to have a banquet for nobles and officials and military officers, and he wanted to invite them to this banquet, essentially to kind of show off his wealth and all these types of things. And so we jump into this story in Esther chapter 1, verse 4, and it says, the celebration lasted 180 days. A tremendous display of the opulent wealth of his empire and the pomp and splendor of his majesty. Some of you guys can't even handle like a 2-hour dinner date. This thing is literally half of a year this celebration is going on. And it's absolutely a show of his wealth and everything that he has going for it. Here's the craziest thing, though. After 180 days, it didn't end. In verse 5, it says, when it was all over, the king gave a banquet for all the people. So it was 180 days of celebration and then a banquet for everyone. From the greatest to the least, all who were in the fortress of Susa, it lasted for 7 days and was held in the courtyard of the palace garden. The courtyard was beautifully decorated with white cotton curtains and blue hangings, which were fastened with white linen cords and purple ribbons to silver rings embedded in marble pillars. Gold and silver couches stood on a mosaic pavement of porphyry marble and mother of pearl and other costly stones. I mean, this sounds like an episode of like Property Brothers or like Love It or List. I mean, they're really trying to sell how nice this was. I mean, it was unbelievable. 180 days celebration, a 7-day feast. And it goes on, it says, drinks were served in gold goblets of many designs. And there was an abundance of royal wine, not that cheap $7 sprout stuff that you guys are getting. This is the good stuff. He told the, jumped ahead. It reflected the king's generosity. By the edict of the king, no limits were placed on the drinking, for the king had instructed all his palace officials to serve each man as much as he wanted. Sounds like a recipe for disaster. This is a biblical way of saying that it was a rager. I mean, it was like, this is over-the-top celebration. He wanted everyone to know how much he had, how wealthy he was, to see this glimpse of his generosity, and this is the way that he's doing it. On the 7th day of the feast, when King Xerxes was in high spirits because of the wine, he told the 7 eunuchs who attended him to bring Queen Vashti to him with the royal crown on her head. He wanted the nobles and all of the other men to gaze on her beauty, for she was a very beautiful woman. And this celebration, I should have said this earlier, but there would have been no women in this celebration. They were all in a different area. So he's there raging with thousands and thousands of people for half a year, and then he has this banquet for 7 days, and they're just unlimited drinks. And then he decides, okay, now it's time. I want to bring my queen in, and I want everyone to see she's the most beautiful woman in the world. And you may be thinking, well, Chris, that sounds a little sexist. And it is. It is. It's a very different culture. Things were done very different ways then. We would never really be okay with that here. But in this culture, this is what's happening. And just as a side note, because I've had people ask questions about this, and I always think it's worth reminding as many people as possible, that just because it's in the Bible does not mean it is the right way to act. There is, especially the Old Testament, is full of examples of what not to do. You look at stories of like polygamy and all of these different things, and I've had people like, why is that in there? It's like, it's not okay. And if you look at these stories, it never turns out okay. They're all warnings about what not to do. And this is one of these things. This is one of these examples that it's in the scriptures and we can learn from it, not because it's what we should do. Although if you're going to have a 7-day banquet, let me know. I will give my approval on that one. No, I'm just kidding. So he calls for her to come in. And if we look below the surface of what we see in our culture being different, if we look below the surface, what is it that we would say based off of what we've been learning so far, what would he be doing in this moment? Please get the answer right. It's bid for attention. What is he doing in this moment? Bidding for attention. You guys are so smart. He is sending out a bid, totally unhealthy, in a very broken way. It's not okay the way he did it, but that's what it is. And bids, like I said, they're not all healthy. They're not all right. They're not all unhealthy. He is bidding for attention. He wants to know that he is loved and respected, that he is in control of his story, that people will respect him and care for him. Because even if you're the king of the largest empire and you have the wealth to have a celebration for 180 days and then to have a 7-day dinner, it doesn't matter how rich or poor or powerful or strong or weak or what your position is, all of us have these emotional needs and we all need to feel like the people that are important to us see us, They care about us. They know us. They understand us. And that they value us. The king is doing the same exact thing. So the story goes on in verse 12. It says, when they conveyed the king's order to Queen Vashti, she refused to come. This made the king furious, and he burned with anger. And it doesn't take like a genius to figure out why she would refuse to walk into a room full of people that have been partying for 7 days to do like a spin on a catwalk. I mean, it's like, that is a dangerous situation. She refuses to come. Maybe she's annoyed. Maybe she doesn't want to be in a room with all these people. The point is, she doesn't see it for what it is, which is a bid for connection. And so she ignores him, and she refuses to come. She responds with indifference. And what he ultimately hears is, I'm avoiding you. Your interests are beneath me. You're not worth my time. I don't want to be involved with you. Your needs are not important to me. This is ultimately what he hears, and he burns with anger, indignant, frustrated. We can't stand. No humans like to be ignored. My four-year-old, when he wants something, he will say, Daddy. And if I don't respond, he will just say, Daddy, over and over again for like 19 minutes until I finally realize, oh my gosh, my kid's talking to me. You know, it's like, he'll just keep saying it over and over and over. Daddy, 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 daddy. Yes. Yeah, he calls me by my first name. That's the relationship I have with my four-year-old now. He's like, Chris Kretzu, attention. Chris Kretzu to the front desk. He'll just keep asking over and over and over again. For now, at some point that may change. And for me, even as an adult, and I don't always do this in a healthy way, but when I want my kids' attention, when I call them or ask for them, if they don't respond, it does something in me. And I won't keep asking over and over again, but I feel hurt. And then I feel angry. And then I respond in that way. We all have this response to being ignored. And so ultimately, we have to figure out, okay, well, what should she have done? Was she supposed to just walk into a dangerous environment with a bunch of people that have been partying? You know, contextually, it was a different time, a different culture. But here's the thing that I think is important for us to hold on to. Research shows that you can respond positively to a bid, and the answer can be no. You do not have to say yes to every person that asks you to do something. Which is important for you to know. Some of you guys have no problem telling people no. Some of you guys feel a little bit of yourself die inside every time you have to say no to somebody. So let's just practice it right now. No. No. I had somebody tell me one time, they're like, you know, Chris, no is a complete sentence. You don't have to make excuses. You don't have to do things that aren't okay or aren't appropriate or that you don't want to do. You can say no, and I have a hard time doing that. But you can say no and still respond positively. Same thing with my son when he's asking me to play video games. It's not just no. It's not just negativity. It's not indifference. It's saying, buddy, I have to go to this meeting right now. But what if tomorrow morning we wake up early? And by that, I mean you wake me up early because I know you'll already be up early. And we play video games before. It's a positive response, and I'm still saying no. We have to figure out how to be able to find this balance in our lives. A different example for this, you know, if someone came to you and said, hey, do you want to catch a movie later? Do you want to see a movie later on? You don't have to say yes for it to be a positive response. There's a big difference between not replying at all, which is indifference. How many of you guys have texted someone and they never responded? I don't think so. I'm not going to let you get away with that. You know, there's this, how frustrating is that when people just don't even respond at all? There's a big difference between that, between replying, why would I do that? I don't even like that trash. I've got other stuff to do. That movie is terrible. That would be a negative response in case you're taking notes and need help. And a positive response could look something more like, I wish I could, but I already have plans. I'm glad you asked me. Maybe we can go another time. Maybe you don't really want to go another time. I get that. But there's ways that we can say no without being negative, without being indifferent, and we can still value that person and help meet their emotional needs. And I don't want that to sound like it's a task and it's an overbearing thing. This is what being in relationship with people looks like. And it looks like caring for people's needs. And so we don't have to say yes to everything in order to be able to respond positively. Each response has a different effect on the relationship. Our response shapes our relationship. And maybe it's a 1 degree change today, but over 12 months and 12 years and 24 years, that relationship will be compounded by the responses that we have today. So the story goes on. We actually don't have these verses on the screen, but it's verse 13. It says that King Xerxes immediately consulted with his wise advisors who knew all of the Persian laws and customs, for he always asked their advice. What must be done to Queen Vashti, the king demanded. What penalty does the law provide for a queen who refuses to obey the king's orders, properly sent through his eunuchs? Now, this might be like, yeah, that's a crazy thing to do, but I know that you have all been burned by someone, and you immediately called your friends and be like, can you believe what this person did? What should I do? You know, you've texted somebody, be like, how am I supposed to, can you believe that they ghosted me? You know, they didn't respond to my text. They didn't respond to my bid. Can you believe this? And we all have this moment where we reach out to people and ask, what should I do now? What should I do now? Unfortunately, King Xerxes asked his buddies, who will tell him anything he wants to hear, and they had been partying for 7 days. So they didn't have the best response. One of them ultimately says, well, you should probably banish her. Get rid of her. Don't try and understand where she's coming from. Don't work on the relationship. Don't ever assume that there's more to the story. Don't take any accountability for your own actions, by all means. Just assume it's all on her side. And they do. They end up, and we're going to go into the story more next week, but it's this ultimate this bid for attention that was coming from an unhealthy place, and the response wasn't the right response, and then it started to not only impact their relationship, but it had implications for the entire kingdom, and that's what we'll look at more next week. But why does he bid in such a dysfunctional way? We talked about this a little bit earlier. Growing up is the process of trying to figure out what you need to do or who you need to be in order to get your needs met. We try different things, we experiment, and if something works for us, then we lean into it. And if it doesn't, we abandon it. And over time, these are the patterns. And again, this man had all of the power and all of the wealth and all of the strength and all of this stuff, and he still is looking for these emotional needs to be met. And he's still bidding for attention in this way. And we, as adults today in 2019, as people that have children or spouses or significant others or family, friendships, we want these relationships to be healthy. We need to understand my response shapes the relationship. The response right now in this moment about video games. The response when my wife comes in and tells me that she rear-ended a car. That's a true story from this week. I didn't tell that to first service. She's fine. We're all fine. My response shapes my relationship. I had just been studying this. We're getting ready for today. She walks in. It's like, okay. You know, it's like, how do I respond in a way that is like, you know, coming alongside and saying, hey, this is going to be okay. We're going to figure this out. This happens over and over and over again throughout our relationships. And so we get to decide what this looks like. We are going to have to learn to bid and respond to bids differently for the sake of healthy relationships. Bids are subtle. They're safe. They're safe ways for us to kind of throw out a hint that I would like some attention, that I would like to be loved, that I would like to be cared for. And what happens when his bid is rejected? He said, fine, I don't want you around anymore anyways. And we do the same thing over time. We start to say, you know what? I'm not even going to try anymore. It's easier to not risk it and not get hurt. But we get the decision today and throughout the series and day after day to say, I'm going to intentionally respond in a positive way for the sake of this relationship. Ultimately, the good news is that connecting is not magic. It's actually a skill. It can be learned and practiced and mastered despite whatever family you grew up in. Maybe I've heard people say, like, I didn't really grow up in a very affectionate family, so I'm just not an affectionate person. It's like, well, we can learn how to be like that. I know other people that grew up on the other side of the spectrum. I know some people that grew up like, well, I grew up in an Italian family and we just yell all the time. And you're not required to do that. And there's other people that can't express kind of emotion or feelings at all. This is what it means for us to say, hey, I'm not gonna just let the relationship be whatever happens. I'm gonna take control. I'm gonna step in and say, I'm gonna work on this. And I'm gonna move it in a direction that's healthy and that will give life not only to me, but to the other person, to our family and the people that are around. Connecting is not magic, and it is also not automatic. It requires a conscious effort and diligence. It requires a willingness to keep trying, even if it feels like it's not working. A few weeks ago, I told this story about how I was out in the middle of a lake on a canoe, and I had drifted way farther than I thought I would. And I realized that nothing will just sit still in water. It's not going to just stay in this one place. That there's always a drift happening. And the same is true in our relationships. I can't just assume it's going to be healthy. I have to say, here's the direction I want to go. I'm going to intentionally be moving this direction. I have to keep working at this. James wrote it this way in James chapter 1. This is the half-brother of Jesus. He's talking and he says, understand this. Feels like a very important thing. Understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. You must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. The Chris translation goes on to say, because your response shapes your relationship. You have to be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. Because the way that we respond in each one of these moments, it shapes the relationship. And for those of us that say, hey, I want to pour into these people. I want to care for these people. I want my family to be healthy. I want my marriage to be strong. I want my friendship, my community. Slow to speak, slow to be angry, quick to listen. Our response shapes our relationships. Ultimately, we have to make it our goal to pay attention and respond positively as often as possible. It's not always with a yes, but it's giving those positive responses to the bids that people are sending out. We won't always get it perfect. And for so many of us, there are things in our personalities and there's things in our lives that are broken. And we feel like, man, I've tried to act differently. I've tried to have healthy relationships. I've worked on this. And this is the hope that we have in the gospel. This is the hope that we have in Jesus, is that he gives us the power to be able to be transformed, to have our hearts and our minds renewed so we can show up in a different way in these relationships. We don't have to be controlled by our past, by other people's decisions, by what's happened to us. We get to step into tomorrow and say, no, I'm going to take control over this. I'm going to respond in a healthy way, because relational health is built one small interaction at a time. It's one small interaction at a time with your kids. It's one small interaction at a time with your spouse, with your coworkers, with your friends. It's understanding that my response in this moment is going to shape the relationship over and over and over again.